Blog Talk Radio.
Hello at the podcast land. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is a Hodge to Hodge podcast, and this is a Messenger Edition. I am Nurse Carmen, and we have co-producers Ken and Ron Hodge. And again, welcome, and thank you for tuning in. Next, we will be having a conversation with the messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening, and thank you all again for tuning in tonight. We want to talk about, a good place for me to start would be to recap what's gone before in previous teachings. Most people believe if they have a thing, more time, more money, love, whatever, then they can finally do a thing. Write a book, take up a hobby, or go on vacation. Buy a home, undertake a relationship, which would allow them to be a thing, happy, peaceful, content, or in love. In actual, they are reversing the be-do-have paradigm in the universe as it really is, as opposed to how you think it is. Having does not produce beingness, but the other way around. First, you be the thing called happy or knowing or wise or compassionate or whatever. Then you start doing things from this place of beingness. And soon you discover that what you are doing winds up bringing you the thing you've always wanted to have. The way to set this creative process, and that is what it is, the process of creation, into motion is to look at what it is you want to have. Ask yourself what you think you would be if you had that. Then go straight to being. In this way, you reverse the way you've been doing the be, do, have paradigm. In actuality, set it right and work with rather than against the creative power of the universe. Here is a short way of stating the principle. In life, you do not have to do anything. It is all a question of what you are being. This is one of the three messages I will touch on again at the end of this dialogue. For now, and to illustrate this, think of a person who just knows that if he could only have a little more time, a little more money, or a little bit more love, he'd be truly happy. He does not get the connection between his not being very happy right now and his not having the time and money or love he wants. On the other hand, the person who is being happy seems to have enough time to do everything that's really important, all the money that's needed, and enough love to last a lifetime. Say, well, he finds he has everything he needs to be happy, being happy to begin with. Decide ahead of time what you choose to be. Produce that in your experience. To be or not to be, that is the question. Happiness is a state of mind. And like all states of mind, it reproduces itself in physical form. There's a statement. Now, I'm sorry, that what I just said is a statement that you might want to hang up on your refrigerator door. All states of mind reproduce themselves. Then you say, well, how can you be happy to begin with or be anything you are seeking to be, more prosperous, for instance, or more love, if you have not what you think you need in order to be that? Act as if you are, and you will draw it to you. What you act as if you are, you become. So you're saying, in other words, fake it until you make it? Something like that, only you can't really be faking. Your actions have to be sincere. Everything you do, do out of sincerity, or the benefit of the action is lost. This is not because God won't reward you, because God does not reward and punish, as you know. But natural laws require the body, mind, and spirit to be united in thought, word, and action for the process of creation to work. You cannot fool your mind. If you are sincere, your mind knows it. And that's just that. If you are insincere, your mind knows it. You've just ended any chance that your mind can help you in the creative process. You can, of course, create without your mind. It's just a great deal more difficult. You can ask your body to do something your mind doesn't believe. And if your body does it long enough, your mind will begin to let go of its former thought about that and create a new thought. Once you have a new thought about a thing, you're well on your way to creating it as a permanent aspect of your being rather than something you're just acting out. This is doing things the hard way, and even in such instances, the action must be sincere. Unlike what you can do with people, you cannot manipulate the universe. So here we have a very delicate balance. The body does something in which the mind does not believe, yet the mind must add the ingredient of sincerity to the body's action for it to work. Then you say, well, how can the mind add sincerity when it does not believe in what the body is doing? By taking out the selfish element of personal gain. You say, well, how? The mind may not be able to sincerely agree that the actions of the body can bring you that which you choose, but the mind seems very clear that God will bring good things through you to another. Therefore, whatever you choose for yourself, give to another. I'm going to say that again. Therefore, whatever you choose for yourself, give to another. If you choose to be happy, cause another to be happy. If you choose to be prosperous, cause another to prosper. If you choose more love in your life, cause another to have more love in theirs. Do this sincerely, not because you seek personal gain, but because you really want the other person to have that. And all the things you give away will come to you. So you say, well, why is that? How does that work? The very act of you giving something away causes you to experience that you have it to give away. Since you cannot give to another something you do not have, your mind comes to a new conclusion, a new thought about you, namely that you must have this or you could not be giving it away. The new thought then becomes your experience. You start being that. And once you start being a thing, you've engaged the gears of the most powerful creation machine in the universe, your divine self. Whatever you are being, you are creating. The circle is complete, and you will create more and more of that in your life. It will be made manifest in your physical experience. So you said that, explain to me why sincerity is so important in giving to another what you choose for yourself. If you give to another as a contract, a manipulation meant to get something to come to you, your mind knows this. You've just given it a signal that you do not now have this. And since the universe is nothing but a big copying machine, reproducing your thoughts in physical form, that will be your experience. That is, you will continue to experience not having it no matter what you do. Furthermore, that will be the experience of the person to whom you're trying to give it. They will see that you are merely seeking to get something, that you have nothing really to offer, and you are giving, and your giving will be empty gestures, seen for all the self-serving shallowness from which it springs. The very thing you sought to attract, you will then push it away. Yet, when you give something to another with purity of the heart, because you see that they want it, need it, and should have it, then you will discover that you have it to give. And that is a grand discovery. That is a grand discovery. So, when you want something, give it away. You will then no longer be wanting it. You will immediately experience having it. From then on, it's only a question of degree. Psychologically, you will find it much easier to add on to than to create out of thin air. What I'm proposing, you see, is that you already have the answers to the questions. Right now, you are living the thought that you do not have the answer, that if you had the answer, you would have wisdom. So you come to people for wisdom. Yet I say to you, be wisdom, and you will have it. And what is the fastest way to be wisdom? Cause another to be wise. Now, okay, I'll ask you the question. I'll pretend that I don't know and you give me the answer. How can the parent who pulls a child out of safety, out of traffic, be truly loving the child? Is love means that you want for the others what they want for themselves. Now, I know quietly everybody's saying, I don't know, but you do. But you thought you did. I know you don't know the answer, but you thought you did. What would your answer be? Well, I would say the parent did not want for the child what the child wanted, which was to stay alive, I say that the child did not want to die, but simply did not know that wandering around in traffic could cause that. So that, in running out there to get the child, the parent wasn't depriving the child of the opportunity to exercise its will at all, but simply getting in touch with the child's true choice, its deepest desire. Then you would say, well, if that's true, then God should be doing nothing but stopping us from hurting ourselves, for it can't be our deepest desires to do damage to ourselves, yet we do damage to ourselves all the time. And God just sits around and watch us? God, always in touch with your deepest desires, and always gives you that. Even when you do something that could cause you to die, if that is your deepest desire, that is what you get, the experience of dying. God never, ever interferes with your deepest desires. So do you mean that when we do damage to ourselves, that is what we wanted to do? That is our deepest desires? Well, you cannot do damage to yourselves. You are incapable of being damaged. Damage is a subjective reaction, not an objective phenomenon. You can choose to experience damage to yourself out of an encounter or phenomenon, but that is entirely your decision. Given that truth, the answer to your question is yes. When you have damaged yourself, it is because you wanted to. But I'm speaking on a very high esoterical level, and that is not really where the question is coming from, in the sense that you meant as a matter of conscious choice. I would say that no, every time you do something that damages yourself, it is not because you wanted to. The child who gets hit by a car because he wandered in the street did not want to get hit by the car. The man who keeps marrying the same kind of woman, one who is wrong for him, packaged in different forms, does not want, desire, seek consciously to keep creating bad marriages. The person who hits a thumb with a hammer cannot be said to have wanted the experience. It was not desire sought, consciously chosen. Yet, all objective phenomena is drawn to you subconsciously. All events are created by your unconsciousness. Every person, place, or thing in your life was drawn to you by you, was self-created, if you will, to provide you with the exact and perfect condition, the perfect opportunity to experience what you next wish to experience as you go about the business of evolving. Nothing can happen, I say to you, nothing can occur in your life which is not a precise, perfect opportunity for you to heal something, create something, or experience something that you wish to heal, create, or experience in order to be who you really are. Then you say, and who really am I? Whomever you choose to be, whatever aspect of divinity you wish to be, that's who you are. That can change at any given moment. Indeed, it often does, from moment to moment. Yet, if you want your life to settle down, to stop bringing you such a wide variety of experience, there's a way to do that. Simply stop changing your mind so often about who you are and who you choose to be. Now, that may be easier said than done. What I see is that you are making these decisions at many different levels. The child who decides to go out into the street to play in traffic is not making a choice to die. She may be making a number of other choices, but dying is not one of them. The mother knows that. The problem here is not that the child has chosen to die, but that the child has made a choice that could lead to more than one outcome, including her dying. That fact is not clear to her. It is unknown to her. It is the missing data which stops the child from making a clear choice, a better choice. So you see, you have analyzed it perfectly. Now, now God would never interfere with your choices, but God will always know what they are. Therefore, you may assume that if a thing happens to you, it is perfect that it did so, for nothing escapes perfection in God's world. The desire of your life, the people, place, and events in it have all been perfectly created by the perfect creator of perfection itself, you and God, in as though you, and as and through you. Now, we can work together in this co-creative process consciously or unconsciously. You can move through life aware or unaware. You can walk your path asleep or awake. You choose. So what I'm saying here is what we have to understand is people are always constantly looking to the sky from which cometh their help and stuff of these natures. And what you have to understand is God is within you and working with you daily. The things that are happening to you, they're happening to you because you choose for them to happen to you. We like to look for a scapegoat and blame it on that boogeyman. But we have to take responsibility and understand what's going on. We have to understand who we are. If all your desire is what your soul desires, everything would be very simple. If you listen to the part of you which is pure spirit, all of your decisions would be easy and all the outcomes joyous. That is because the choice of spirits are always the highest choices. They don't need to be second-guessed. They don't need to be analyzed or evaluated. They simply need to be followed, act on. Yet, you are not only a spirit. You are a triune being made up of body, mind, and spirit. That is both the glory and the wonder of you. For you often make decisions and choices at all three levels simultaneously. And they by no means always coincide. It is not uncommon for your body to want one thing while your mind seeks another, and your spirit desires yet a third. This can be especially true for children who are often not yet mature enough to make distinctions between what sounds like fun to the body and what makes sense to the mind, much less what resonates with the soul. So the child waddles into the street. Now, as God, God is aware of all your choices, even those you make subconsciously. God will never interfere with them, but rather just the opposite. It is God's job to secure that your choices are granted. In truth, you grant them to yourselves. What God has done is put a system into place that allows you to do that. The system is called the process of creation. Now, when your choices conflict, your body, mind, and spirit not acting as one. The process of creation works at all three levels, producing mixed signals, results. If on the one hand, your being is in harmony and your choices are unified, astonishing things can occur. I'm going to say that again. On the other hand, your being is in harmony and your choices are unified. Your being, your mind, body, and soul, if they are in harmony and your choices are unified, astonishing things can occur. Your young people had a phrase, having it all together, which could be used to describe the unified state of being. There are also levels within levels in your decision making. This is particularly true at the level of the mind. The mind can and does make decisions and choices from one or at least three interior levels: logic, intuition, and emotion. And sometimes from all three, producing the potential for even more inner conflict. Within one of those level emotion, there are five more levels. These are the five natural emotions: grief, anger, envy, fear, and love. And within these, there are two final levels: love and fear. The five natural emotions include love and fear, yet love and fear are the basis of all emotions. The other three of the five natural emotions are outgrowths of these two. Ultimately, all thoughts are sponsored by love or fear. This is the great polarity. This is the primal duality. Everything ultimately breaks down to one of these. All thoughts, ideas, concepts, understanding, decisions, choices, and actions are based in one of these. And in the end, there is really only one. And this is where we're going to begin to close the show out tonight. And I pray that people will listen closely to what is being said. I hope that those that are hearing this will play it back a time or two so that you can better understand what I'm saying. And what I said is, in the end, there is only one real emotion, and that is love. In truth,
amen, amen.
Love is all there is. Even fear is an outgrowth of love, and when used effectively, expresses love. So I say to you all, I love you all very much. I hope something was said
love
that would bring you to want to go within so that you can know just who and whose you are. Because
thank you.
It's time out for us to be wandering around as the Israelites did in the biblical stories 40 years into the wilderness. It's time for us to know who we are. I thank you all very much for your time, and I pray that you will continue to grow, to continue to become awakening to who you are, and let go of some of the theologies and some of the misconceptions that people have told you about you and God, which are one. I love you all very much. Good night, and have a blessed rest of the week. Good night, everyone.
You also. Thank you. Good night.